and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires we call the internets is Joe Crazy Rider. How you doing today, Joe?
You know, I could have gone to a Jethro Tull concert. I could be watching WWE Network. I could be doing horrible things to a dog with a fork. But I am here podcasting for you, our two fans.
Please do not admit on this podcast you do horrible things to a dog with a fork.
Well, it's either him or me, and I happen to get the fork first. You might get it tomorrow.
Why is it why do I do this with you? You're going to get me indicted.
Because if you did it by yourself, you'd be blind by now. Hang on a second. WWE's trying to... Ooh, I could watch the Monday Night War.
Are you kidding? The crickets are trying to break in.
Yeah. Well, it's cold outside. It's starting to get wintry. Here I am. I got my...
Oh, no, it's not. It was in the 60s today.
I got my Mr. Rogers sweater on.
It's a beautiful day.
Well, it's a beautiful night now, but according to...
And you've got your Mr. Rogers sweater on that you used... Is it the same sweater that our good buddy Scott Nutter would make fun of you for wearing to wrestling events?
It is.
Joe would, when we would watch ECW.
ECW.
Show up for this ultra-masculine, violent entertainment. Wearing a grandpa sweater.
No, Mr. Rogers sweater.
Same thing.
I don't think so. Grandpa had some pretty itchy sweaters. Mr. Rogers was a very comfortable, warm sweater. Button up front, pockets. Good place to hide your used Kleenex.
Now, Mr. Nutter was my boss, and then when I got promoted, we were, you know, like, we were pretty much on the same level. He was a director at the group home I was working at part-time in the 90s, and he was a power lifter. Joe, could you please describe Mr. Scott Nutter for the audience?
A Volkswagen. But a big
Scott
Volkswagen.
At one point weighed over 500 pounds.
And most of it muscle.
He could bench press. Well, he still does. He does competitive weightlifting, powerlifting. He can still lift over 650 pounds. His record squat that I saw, he had a photo of it, was 850 pounds. That's a squat. That's not, you know, putting the things in the leg press. Nope. That's putting 850 pounds on a bar of metal, putting it on your back, lowering yourself to where you are almost sitting on the ground, and then standing back up. Scott was big.
Yes.
And he had an adopted son, to which Joe gave this adopted son new phrases to use at church.
Oh, absolutely.
Such as the cat that wandered around, and I forget the setup.
I thought it was a Persian cat, and what they had done is they had Persian cats, in case you've never had one, they have very long hair. The idea is you comb it and keep it nice. Well, Americans are lazy, so they don't. And every so often, you'll cut the hair all the way down to the skin, usually right before summer, so the poor thing doesn't sweat to death. So, you know, as you come into a house, most cats, if they're any type of personality, will come up and want to see who this giant cat is that's invading their turf. So I come up and the cat comes up and they're like, yeah, that's our new cat. And I see that it's shaved and I go, oh, that's okay. I like shaved pussy.
To which his 8-year-old son referred to that cat as a shaved pussy for the next year.
Yeah, when their pastor came to visit, they said, oh, look, your cat got its hair cut in the little 8-year-old. Said, yeah, we like our shaved pussy.
You know who else likes to make crude comments?
What?
These guys, our sponsors.
This show has sponsors, and those sponsors are our best friends. They can be your best friends, too. Our first sponsor is DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best bar none web host in the whole known universe. If you need a website, DreamHost.com is the host you need to go to. And if you use the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, you get $20 off your first year. Just go to DreamHost.com. Do you need healthy snacks? You probably do. We all do. How would you like them where they show up without you even having to order them, where you just get a subscription, they show up so that when you've run out, they show up again? Graze.com has great healthy snacks, and you get a free box if you use the code CORYS3R5P. That's CORYS3R5P. Your first box and your fifth box are free. If you're listening to this show, you're one of the smartest people in the whole known universe, and you're probably fed up with paying too much for razors. So join Dollar Shave Club. They deliver great blades every month for just a few bucks. No more schlepping to the drugstore. No more overpriced, ridiculous shave tech that you don't need. Razor plans start at just $3 a month. Check it out and let us know what you think. Just go to dollarshaveclub.com/crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z. If you'd like to advertise on Crazy Comics and Stories or the Solitaire Rose podcast, we'd love it. Just go ahead and email me at corey.strode@gmail.com, subject advertising. You can also send us emails there. We love to get them. We love to read them. And most of the time, we can build a whole show around a three-line email. So go ahead and email us at corey.strode@gmail.com, or you can call or leave a message that we will play on the air at 952-856-0519. Thanks.
Cool.
There you go. Well, Joe, did you see what Marvel announced at the New York Comic Convention?
No.
Secret Wars is coming next year.
Ooh.
And there have been a ton of other announcements. You have Planet Hulk, summer 2015.
Hulk, come back.
What was the House of M 2015? Civil War 2015.
So what you're saying is everything that's old is will be new again.
Well, I'm wondering if Secret Wars is kind of a... Part of the event will be a retelling of these events. But in thinking about Secret Wars, because Secret Wars was really one of the first big events that a comic company did, and now feels like all they do are big events, I thought it might be fun for us to discuss event crossover comics.
Again? Haven't we visited this one over and over?
Not really.
Then again, so have the publishers, so.
Well, there is that. But I wanted to talk a little about where they came from. Because Marvel always started. If you look at real early Marvel, they were different from other comic book companies in that they had characters crossing over very early on. Matter of fact, one of the earliest issues of Marvel Mystery Comics, which was the book that gave us the Human Torch and Submariner. It was the first Marvel comic. Very early on, they had a big fight between the Submariner and the Human Torch that lasted an entire issue.
And if you want to
see... What are you doing over there?
Well, you know, we want to talk comic books, so I'm getting my comic books ready.
Oh, okay.
Because you said Secret Wars, and that'll come into play a little bit later.
Do you keep your comics in, like, butcher paper?
No, this one actually came in the classic brown bag as opposed to the comic book bay. But we will get to that later.
Okay. But Marvel had crossovers here and there, you know, where one character would show up in another character's book. And they continued that when they restarted their superheroes in the 60s. DC didn't do as much of that. You know, they had their Justice Society, and Batman and Superman hung out a lot, but they had a book in which they hung out all the time called World's Finest. But in my mind, the first real crossover, unless Joe thinks of an earlier one, was the Avengers Defenders War. And Steve Englehart has told the story where he was writing both books and he said, I would like these books, you know, I'd like to do a story where part one is in the Avengers, part two is in the Defenders, and then go back and forth all summer. And at Marvel, they were concerned about that because they said, well, what if one of them's late? What if there's a problem? And Englehart had to, I forget what he had to do to promise that he wouldn't be late on any of the books, but there was a financial penalty if he would have been late on any of his scripts. And it came out, and it was a huge success. I started collecting and reading Marvel in like 75, 76, and it had happened in 73, I think. And people were still talking about it in the letters pages. And the kids I knew who read comics still talked about the big Avengers Defenders War. And Joe, do you remember the Avengers Defenders War at all, or did you read it after?
Long after. My first Defender comic was number 33. It was given to me by my guitar teacher because she knew that I liked comics, and I was able to go back and pick it up as back issues. So that's how I got involved with it. But then of course later, I think I have it now in book form. So if I want to read it, if I got the hankering to read it, I can anytime I want.
The next big crossover that I know of was an unauthorized crossover between Marvel and DC.
Now, when you say crossover, you're not talking like a one-shot, like, because I remember, didn't Daredevil crossover in a Fantastic Four?
Yeah, but
that was just like a single issue. So you're talking like a multi-issue extravaganza, not just a crossover thing. Okay.
Because they did a lot of that in other books too, because by the 70s you had Werewolf by Night. Did a crossover with Tomb of Dracula where, okay, Dracula shows up in Werewolf by Night, and then he's back in that issue. Or the one that I really remember from my early days of reading was when Nova crossed over with Spider-Man.
Yeah, I was going to say that was probably my first one because, as we covered, my first comic that started me down this road was Amazing Spider-Man 178, and he crossed over a few issues earlier. So as I worked my way back reading these, it was like, oh, I got to pick up this Nova comic. And I didn't pick up the Nova comic beyond that one, but it was just a crossover. And then eventually you'd run across that in other Marvel books. You know, as you're reading Avengers, suddenly it pops over into super secret villain, whatever team up.
Oh yeah. The super villain team up, or the one I really liked was when Daredevil crossed over with Ghost Rider, because it was one of those where, what do these two books have in common at all?
Yeah. I remember Doctor Strange crossing over in a big fight with Dracula, which was pretty awesome.
Where Doctor Strange was killed.
Yeah. So he'd
survived the destruction of the entire universe, and then he's killed by Dracula.
But the big thing with these was that they were just onesie twosies. They weren't like the Defenders Avenger War where you had to read, was it six or more issues?
Yep, it was six
in row.
Issues.
So blame Englehart. I'm going to call him up right now and blame him.
Then there was a crossover between Marvel and DC. Unauthorized, of course.
Of course.
But Marvel, a lot of the writers at Marvel and DC were young comic fans. They were guys in their early 20s. And, you know, on Fridays, they'd get together and hang out at the bar. Jim Shooter talked about how there was a big poker game that went on. And they kind of worked out. Rutland, Vermont would have a parade that had people dressed up as superheroes. It was like one of the earliest cosplay things. So they kind of did this story where the Justice League and the Avengers and Thor and these other characters all ended up in Rutland, Vermont. And they would show the other characters as people in costume. So, oh, look, there's a guy in a Superman costume. And then over in the Justice League, it would be, oh, look, there's a guy in a Thor costume sort of thing. But the creators were part of the story. And if it was in a DC book, the DC creators would have names and the other people would just be people and vice versa. So Gary Friedrich and Roy Thomas and Gary Conway were all named in the Marvel books. But when they showed up over in the DC books, they were just regular folk in the crowd. And it weaved through a few books. And of course, no one's ever collected it as a book, but I have read it. And each story is separate other than these bystanders who just kind of seem to go through the entire story. And the guys at Marvel knew what they were doing, but the guys at DC, well, most of DC editors were older guys in their 50s and 60s. They didn't pay attention to what was going on over at Marvel, so they didn't know what the hell was happening. But the one that I really remember as being the big event book was Contest of Champions. And Contest of Champions was a 3-issue miniseries where some of the cosmic elders in the Marvel Universe held a contest. And it was supposed to be a Marvel Treasury edition for the 1980 Summer Olympics, a big tie-in, where the heroes would compete for all this stuff. But Joe, what happened to the 1980 Olympics here in the U.S.?
Apparently it was preempted by a Mr. Rogers special.
Yeah, Russia invaded Afghanistan, and we were so pissed about it, we said, well, we're not sending any of our people to the Russian games. So Russia won all the medals that year. And then, of course, in 1984, Russia thought up some excuse not to send
they returned the favor.
When it was in the U.S., but Marvel was stuck with this 96-page story that they couldn't run because we were boycotting the Olympics. So they redrew some of it and changed some of it around and put it out as a 3-issue miniseries, one of the earliest miniseries. And they thought, it's just this inventory story. We'll dump it out there. Nobody will care. But it sold better than anything else Marvel put out. Because, oh, look, here's Spider-Man and Hulk and Thor and Captain America and the
X-Men. And the first appearance of Blitzkrieg and the first appearance of Collective Man and the first appearance of Le Pergrin and first appearance of Shamrock and first appearance of Talisman and I could go on and on, but, you know.
So it's a whole bunch of foreign characters
and
a bunch of minor ones,
yeah.
But it sold very, very, very well. And from what Jim Shooter says, they were looking around to try and do something similar when Mattel came to them with a toy deal. And part of it was they wanted to tie in with a comic, much like G.I. Joe had tied in with a comic, because the G.I. Joe line had been a big success. And the G.I. Joe comic was a big success. So Jim Shooter, out of the goodness of his heart, not that there would be any royalties involved,
royalty checks are in, Jimmy,
decided he would be the writer of Marvel Secret Wars. And it was officially titled Marvel Superheroes Secret Wars, because that was also the name of the toy line.
Of course, at the same time, in either a moment of serendipity or just leaked plans, DC was coming out with Crisis on Infinite Earths. And of course, their big thing with Crisis is they've been doing various Crisis, all the way back in Justice League. Oh, what were those issues where they had resurrected the Justice Society?
It was in the 60s. Yeah, I know that. I don't remember the issue numbers, but it was the early 60s.
The first time that Julius Schwartz referenced Golden Age DC superheroes was in, I believe, Flash 129. The Flash of Two Worlds, famous cover where the two Flash are running at you. They met again, and I believe there was also a Green Lantern issue where a Green Lantern, our Hal Jordan, met the Golden Age Green Lantern. And this actually became known as the first Crisis comic, because those two got together not just as an accident of meeting, but because there was a crisis going on. And then they, in Justice League, they actually went together, and so every year you would have a get-together of Justice Society and the Justice League, whoever the current incarnations were, sometimes big things happen, like when they decided to go to Earth S and we met Shazam for the first time, and there was a first battle between Superman and Shazam. Sometimes big events happen that kind of, everybody kind of went, eh, whatever, like when the Earth 2 Batman died. Eventually, of course, they decided to do the granddaddy of all, the Crisis on Infinite Earths, where DC took all their Earths they had, Earth Prime, where we live, Earth 1, where the superheroes up to the 80s lived, Earth 2, a golden age, Earth S was Shazam, Earth X were, I forget who's, every time they absorbed a new universe, they made a new Earth out of it. And, as a fanboy, I had no problem keeping the Earth straight, but apparently DC thought we did. So they decided to make, I'm sorry, I'm going to have a tough time saying this without cracking up. In order to make their continuity simpler, they would have a Crisis on Infinite Earths and jam it all together so it'd be easy for simpletons like us to follow.
Well, that was part of it.
We're not going to get into the reasons as to why it failed, other than DC's been trying to cover their ass on it ever since. The book.
I will disagree that it failed.
Joe, no, I'm saying, I'm saying from a continuity standpoint, it failed. And again, okay. We can make a whole podcast on that. From a sales standpoint, it was phenomenal. It was exciting. It had George Perez art. What else could you want? It was fantastic. And it was 12 issues, just like Secret Wars was 12 issues. It was played out differently, though, whereas Crisis was just this huge event that affected everybody in DC, even if it was just so happened that all the skies in the book happened to be red, you know, which indicated the oncoming crisis. They wouldn't do that nowadays, would they? Secret Wars was interesting because they were all drawn to Central Park, the heroes that were getting involved, and they flew into this giant construct, and minutes later, hours later, days later, I forget what it was, they all came back, and every hero was changed. Spider-Man had a black costume, Hulk had a broken leg and was extremely grouchy, the Thing was gone, the She-Hulk was with them, and again, I just finished reading the John Byrne Omnibus where they covered this. And, so we knew the end of, and of course the whole problem was, is, well, how did they get there? And that's what the fun of the 12 issues were. So there was a lot of comparison the way fanboys are wont to do. There was no internet then, so it's not as crazy as it was now. God forbid if there was. But I found both stories interesting. They had their flaws. But it was a big crossover, and it went into all the books and all the universes. I mean, the X-Men were involved. You think of a minor Marvel or DC character, if he didn't die in Crisis, he definitely made an appearance. And they, you know, they killed off Supergirl. They killed off Barry Allen Flash. They eventually got rid of Earth 2 Superman, the Earth 2 Huntress.
Any character that had a pretty much a double went away. The other thing about Crisis was they went, all right, there are no more alternate Earths.
Nope, just one.
The thing about Crisis I find interesting, because I've read the stuff about how it came about. They actually hired a guy whose job it was to read everything.
And they didn't think to call Corey and I. That's what I'm shocked.
No,
no wonder we don't like New 52.
And they made notes because what they were going to do was a history of the DC universe. And when it was first being planned, you know, it was okay. We got our 50th anniversary coming up. We're going to do this history of the DC universe. And Warren Wolfman had started using this character called the Monitor, showing up in a couple issues of New Teen Titans. And as it grew, they kind of went, oh, okay, well, let's do this big story that streamlines everything.
It was kind of neat.
And what
is
the
that
goal was to
monitor
bring,
was never seen.
They were trying to, more and more readers were coming over from Marvel because more and more of the Marvel creators were coming over. Roy Thomas came over. Gene Colan came over. George Perez came over. Marv Wolfman came over. And they were trying to get more and more of the Marvel readers. And in talking to people at conventions, people said, oh, DC's too confusing. There are all these Earths. It's, you know, hard to follow. I don't want to start in the middle of a story. You've got 50 years of history. Kind of like what people say now about comics. So Marv Wolfman had this idea of, okay, here's what we do. We do this story where we go back to the beginning of time. There's only one universe. We have that as part of it, and then the rest of the series would be the history of the DC universe so that people could go, oh, okay, here's how it goes from now on. Well, Crisis grew and grew and grew to where the history of the DC universe got to be a separate book. And as they were planning it, they were saying, hey, if you guys want to tie into this story, you know, here's what you can do. And Roy Thomas, knowing that Earth 2 was going to go away, and he was kind of the father of Earth 2 at that point, was like, oh, I better tie into this, or by the time they're done, I won't be able to do anything. Meanwhile, over at Marvel, Shooter was very much...
I got a trivia question for you.
Okay.
What was the comic that we first saw the monitor?
Jonah Hex. I don't remember what issue, but Jonah Hex.
No. G.I. Combat 274.
Oh, that's
and
right. I knew it was a non-hero
about it
book.
Was that nobody cared because G.I. Combat was dying a slow death. And that was the, I mean, we'd seen it in, Titans 21, where it was like Monitor and Shadows, the first full appearance. And of course, by the time Crisis hit, all of a sudden people realized this and that book went crazy.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's back to normal. But that was just kind of a fun trivia thing.
But Shooter went into it saying, okay, you know, we've got these things that we're going to do. But he would go to books and go, all right, you need to change something. Tell me what you're going to change, and I'll have it happen in Secret Wars. So Secret Wars was very much top down. You know, Shooter was taking over. He was trying to make this a big, big event because he wanted to really, he wanted it to be huge. They also know that DC was doing this big event because there were no secrets. You know, people worked at both companies. And Marvel's always had a history of finding out what other people are doing and kind of undercutting them. Let's not forget, you know, Martin Goodman. Oh, gee, Mad selling well? Here's 10 knockoffs of it. Or in the 70s.
That's crazy.
When... No. That was a magazine.
Oh.
Or in the 70s when DC's horror books started to sell well. Hey, let's reprint a bunch of our crap from the 50s. They had 26 horror reprint books in the 70s. Now, myself, I always say that if you were 12 when Secret Wars came out, you thought it was the greatest book you'd ever read. I was not. I was in college, and I thought it was terrible. Everybody was out of character. It was tons and tons of standing around and talking. And while Spider-Man got a new costume.
Oh, he also got
like,
the
oh, you got a new costume
on the X-Men.
Again. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Spider-Man was able to defeat the X-Men.
Well, I ran away from but yeah, Professor X mind wiped him, you know, so yeah. Not that he'd ever do that.
And I forget how many issues ended with somebody pointing and going, look at what Galactus is doing! And then the next issue would be, oh, he's making a machine, big deal, who cares? Secret Wars, I remember by the end, it felt like this hateful slog that you'd, oh God, why isn't this over yet? Because I still wasn't at a point to go, well, this book sucks, I'm not buying it. It was, oh, please let this be over. And the art got progressively worse as you went on because it kept getting later and later and later and later. And I think there were some issues that were quite literally drawn over a weekend. And it shows. While Crisis, George Perez was putting his heart and soul into it. And he talked about after it was done, both he and Wolfman were just, they were spent. They were done. They didn't want to do any comics for a while. At Marvel, you didn't have a choice whether you tied in or not. At DC, you had a choice. So there were some books who were the Red Sky crossovers, which is, you know, there were a couple books by Mike W. Barr where the skies were colored red and none of the characters mentioned it at all. There was an editorial caption about the skies are red over, but none of the characters, it had nothing to do with the story because Barr said, I don't want to tie in with that.
But you'd probably,
it gets in the way of my story.
You probably would buy it because I believe there was always a corner blurb or something that said Infinite Crisis tie-in.
Yeah.
Or crossover or event.
And it was at that point where they realized, hey, putting a thing that says this is a tie-in boosts sales. And they even put out a Losers book, and the Losers were one of their military characters that hadn't sold for, last time it sold was when Kirby did it in the mid-70s. But they put out a Losers special that tied in with Crisis. Really didn't tie in with Crisis, by the way.
No, it didn't, because by the time they did die in Crisis, it was different from the way it...
Yes. But it sold because it was a Crisis tie.
Oh.
And that's kind of what became, oh, if we have these big events, books that tie into it will sell better. So we can use it to kind of bump up the sales and get people to read, get people to try books that aren't selling real well.
And now the other thing, I believe, didn't these crossovers start at summertime?
They would usually start either before summer or in September, because a lot of them would start in September because sales would normally go down in September. But hey, if there's a big event, start it in August, or and people would keep buying it through to try and boost sales through the months when comics didn't do well. So there was a lot of different tricks they used, and for a while it really worked well.
Because the reason I mentioned that, and we've talked about this before, there was a crossover that's still about half a decade away that would change that thought. And we'll get to that once we get past Crisis and Secret Wars.
Well, pretty much after Crisis and Secret Wars, Marvel and DC both realized, hey, you know, we do a big event. They would try to do one a year.
If they do an event, they will come.
Yeah. And I worked at Shinders when, started in 88. And we would, you know, there would be the event book, and we put the tie-ins around it, and all of those would sell. And the one that really, you know, Secret Wars 2, oh my God. Marvel would have, like, here's all, every book tied in with Secret Wars 2 at least twice. And the one I remember most was the Byrne one in Fantastic Four, where the story was already done. And Byrne finally bowed to editorial pressure and put the Beyonder in there when it was supposed to be some other character.
Which one was that?
The Human Torch story.
Okay.
Because when you read it now, it's like, wow, the Beyonder really doesn't fit in the story. It's because the Beyonder wasn't in the story when it was laid out.
Okay, because like I said, I just read that. And I remember when it originally came out, it was pretty cool. But the later one where he ties in with the Doom thing, that was pretty good. That was good burn.
So, Joe, what I wanted to talk about, and, you know, you could go off on tangents. We always do.
Of course.
What were your five favorite crossovers? The ones where you go back and you read them now and they don't suck.
Well, the one thing I'll mention before we jump down the crossover road, when Operation Galactic Storm came out in 92, and this was a 19 book crossover between the Avengers and blah, blah, blah.
And it didn't have its own book. It just went through all the Avengers.
And it sold.
Basically, if Mark Gruenwald edited it, it was part of the story.
And it sold really well. And that woke up their eyes to say, hey, we don't have to wait till summer or fall to do a big crossover event. We can do it year round. You know, and now, of course, one event leads into the other. So that's a different subject. I just realized by the time I get my first copies of this Marvel Avengers X-Men Access, the last issue will be published before I get the first one through Discount Comic Book Service.
So, oh, it's that fast?
It's like two or three a month.
Oh, okay.
So anyways, go ahead and start with your top five. You want to start with the worst five or the top five?
Let's end with the ones we like.
Okay.
Okay. So first, and these are not in any order other than, you know, the ones I thought of, but these were the events I didn't like. I didn't like the main story, or I didn't like the tie-in, or I thought it was, you know, a big wet fart where you have to go and take a shower and change your underpants. First one was Millennium. And the idea of Millennium, it was supposed to kind of boost the Green Lantern stuff, because the bad guys in it were the Manhunters, which were the first Guardian. The Guardians of the Universe made the Manhunters first, but they failed because they were robots, and that's why they created the Green Lantern Corps. But the Manhunters were still out there. And the idea behind Millennium was that there were these sleeper agent Manhunters who this event they would begin to wake up, and we would find out that longtime characters in the DC universe had always been Manhunters. And most of it, they would get around, but the story itself was just, it wasn't very fun. And the big thing at the end of it was we had new Guardians. That's right. The series, The New Guardians, which was god-awful. I love Steve Englehart, but, oh, New Guardians was god-awful. And most of the tie-ins were stupid. The one I remember most was in Superman, because John Byrne had said that when the Kents found Superman, there was a big snowstorm, and then by the time the snow was cleared, the Kents had basically been able to lie to people and say, no, we had this baby. Had him during the snowstorm. Well, we found out it was a 6-month-long snowstorm, and it was caused by the Manhunters. Oh, and Lana Lang had always been a sleeper agent.
Ah, good to know.
Ugh. And it was weekly. And even though it was weekly, it still felt like it took forever to finish. But it sold. I was working at Schindler's, and that damn thing sold. We couldn't get enough of them. People bought it and bought it and bought it. Joe, do you have one, or should I keep going? Should we alternate?
2011's Fear Itself. Could not finish it. I have it. I don't believe I ever read it. I just lost interest. It was like the first company-wide crossover since Secret Invasion, so everybody was all hyped up, and it was like, all I remember is like Thor's uncle was like, who had been banished a long time ago and could never be defeated, was coming to Earth, and he so freaked out Odin that Odin just said, oh, that's it for Midgard. We're going to Asgard and shutting everything off. And
we're shutting her down.
And then different people turned into different things, and your friend now was not your friend, and I don't know what the hell happened. I also remember afterwards there was there were like some crossovers, and at the end Valkyrie had a Fear Itself, the Fearless, trying to find these hammers that the Worthy left behind together. And the only cool thing that happened out of that is it was like a big end up where she was breaking into the Fantastic Four building, and the first person she runs into is Thing. And then the next issue, Thing's like, oh, I know what you're doing here. Take it. Because Thing was one of the guys who turned into a whatever it was when he got a hold of the hammer. And he was like, better you have it than me. You know, so it was kind of like the fight that wasn't the fight, you know, which was unexpected. But this thing was just bad. I mean, people gave it good reviews, but I just, blah, it just fizzled out. There was too much going on. You never knew if you should pick up the himself sin past, for himself worthy.
Hold on, you fizzled out there.
Don't worry, the crossover fizzled out. You're better off me not talking about it. It was terrible. The capital T. And it's still in my collection. Like I said, I just fizzled out. I think I just bought it through inertia. Very disappointing.
That's what I have, is Infinity Crusade. Infinity Gauntlet was awesome.
Oh.
Infinity War was okay.
Okay.
Infinity Crusade was a mess. And the way it tied in with all the other books was, so in Infinity Gauntlet was Warlock versus Thanos. Infinity War was Warlock versus the Magus. Infinity Crusade was Warlock versus a female version of himself that made evil doppelgangers of every hero. And Spider-Man was already in the middle of a Clone War, so it was a cluster. So imagine all of the characters in the Clone Wars having an evil duplicate. It was the crossover that gave us the imaginatively titled character Spider-Side, a six-armed evil clone.
Oh, we're bringing back obscure characters
Venom
again.
Spider-Man.
I never would have guessed that obscure character. You got me on that one.
Oh, and in the end, in the others, in Infinity Gauntlet, you remember big things. In Infinity War, you remember, oh, you know, it was fun to watch the characters, you know, Infinity Crusade was where some of the heroes decided to go with Warlock's female version. So it was hero versus hero, and it just didn't work. I didn't like it. They'd
because
gone to the well too many times.
It was all mind control. It would have been more interesting had they did what they said they were going to do. It would be like, okay, suddenly your best friend is not your best friend anymore and actively fighting against you, not because he's changed, but because he believes in what he's fighting for.
Which is why Civil War was so good.
Much better, yeah. And again, at the end of it, it was all, oh, no, you didn't go off with Adam Warlock's female side because you believed in what she was fighting for. You went because she brainwashed you. So at the end of the series, nothing happened. And, you know,
yeah.
Oh, we're buddies. You're brainwashed. I mean, that's got to be a common thing in superhero universe. Oh, you were brainwashed last month? Yeah, no worries.
Again?
Dr. Octopus in your brain? Hey, we're okay. We're cool. We're solid.
Joe, you got one?
You keep going. I can't even... The problem with the bad ones is I can't even think about it.
The next one I thought of was Blood and Thunder.
Oh, my God. That's the one I was trying to think of. Blood and Thunder.
Which was supposed to be this big crossover between Warlock and Thor, where Thor had been consumed with bloodlust. And instead, it was just Thor beating the shit out of things and people chasing him for 12 issues. And it was one where I remember I ordered the first batch. And after I read the story, it's like, yeah, I'm not going to get any of the books that tie in unless I already buy it.
It went through Thor, Silver Surfer, Warlock Chronicles, Warlock and the Infinity Watch, back again, ad nauseum for like 3 months.
And again, at the end of it, Thor had been mind controlled.
Yep. Mind control.
So everything's better now. The next one on my list is one that I actually did a solo podcast on, Joe.
Uh-oh.
Star Blast, which was the crossover that brought the new universe into the Marvel universe and was so delayed that the last issue came out 4 months after it was supposed to come out. So all of the tie-in books had finished their stuff and ended on a cliffhanger that was supposed to go into Star Blast number 4. Which didn't come out and was written by the editor, which didn't come out. And then the issues after didn't mention it at all in any way, shape or form. So you were reading, it's like all the stuff that I've been reading for the past 3 months. Now it just, no one's ever mentioning it. And I don't know why. And they brought the new universe into the Marvel universe. You'd think it would be a big deal, but no, they never did anything with it. So you've got this big event where at the end, yeah, we locked the new universe away in a place nobody can ever get to and it can never be mentioned again. And, thanks. Thanks. A lot of the big events need to have something big happen at the end, in my opinion. Because if all these heroes are getting together and dealing with a huge crisis, there has to be something. And I'm not one of these people who says that you need to have a big death or you need to have a big change. But there needs to be some conclusion that makes it worth everybody getting together. And I think back to the Thanos story in the 70s that started in Avengers Annual, went to Marvel 2 and 1, where there was it was just two issues, but all the heroes got together to fight Thanos and they defeated him. And it was a defeat where you went, oh wow, that was cool. And it resonated. It mattered. But these crossovers that suck, it's usually the execution's poor and then the conclusion is something where you go, huh? Speaking of huh, the worst crossover.
Oh wait, I got one for you. Let me see if I can guess. I was going to go with War of the Gods, but as I mentioned, every time we bring it up, if you actually get them and put them in order, it actually is a pretty decent story. But I mean, you're talking 25 parts. And that was the downfall.
I thought it was
40. No, I actually enjoyed it. I mean, I thought it was a pretty good.
No, I mean, I thought it was 40 comics that tied in with.
I got 25 off Wikipedia and there were a few other ones. And the problem was, is that it was so messed up. We've talked about it before. Somebody decided to join the army rather than finish the last part of the miniseries. So, but at the same time, Armageddon 2001 came out. Ugh. It had potential, and some of the stories were pretty good. Basically, a character named Wave Rider discovers that there's a character from the future called Monarch that is basically going to lay waste to everybody and everything. And what's worse, it's somebody that's currently alive in the DC universe. So Wave Rider runs through... I believe it goes through all the annuals that time. It has two bookends. It goes through the annuals. So he goes and he touches Batman. He touches Superman. He goes through the Justice League. All these different people touching him over and over to see what their futures are. One of the cooler ones was Action Comics annual number 3, where Superman became President of the United States, which I thought was really cool. There's some good scenes in there where Superman's confronting other powers about, I know you're a nuclear power. He's talking to them in their own language and the powers are like, how are we going to deal with this? Guardians of the Galaxy come down and offer him the ring saying you protect the earth. And Superman's like, you know what? That's too much power. So that annual was kind of fun to read. But what botched it up, apparently the ending of the story was leaked somehow. And again,
yes, it was leaked online.
And again, this wasn't like the big ass internet now, you know, where it's like, it'll be all over except the crying. So DC hurried up and changed it and just really badly botched it. Instead of being the one we thought it would be, you know,
and the one all the clues had been placed for.
We're talking like Captain Atom, who would have had the power to do it. And it actually ends, and I believe Justice League Europe Annual number 2, Wave Rider's like, well, you're the last person to check. Contact touches Captain Atom, and that leads right into
Armageddon 2001, part two.
And, of course, they botched it up and said somehow it was the Hawk from Hawk and Dove, you know, which, you know, he had already gone through Hawk and Dove and discovered it wasn't them. And there was no way Hawk had that type of power. And later on down the road, they did a JSA storyline saying that Mardu had created the illusion of Dove and blah, 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 Lords of Chaos and Order, blah, 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 Hector Hall, blah, 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 Dr. Freedom. They botched it, face it. They should have just kept with the original one. The funny thing was, as a collector, I didn't know the ending was given away. You know, so they're all gnashing their teeth and changing artwork. And it's like the internet was such a small group of people then. It's not like it is now. They could have just let it roll and it would have made that big a difference. You know, so again, Action Comics annual number 3, check it out. The rest of them, they're kind of fun. What if stories, you know, what if happened in the future? But
it's what will these characters be in the year 2001?
Ignore it.
Which is a lot like Future's End, the September of those, where, well, here are these characters at the end of, you know, whatever. We're much more jaded now. We go, well, these stories are never going to happen, so who cares? Whereas back then it was, oh, cool. 10 years from now, you know, this could be a possible future. But again, they botched the ending.
Botched. Super botched. And I even think they tried to cover it up in, what was after Infinite Crisis?
Zero Hour. No.
Yes, no, it was Zero Hour. They tried to correct it in Zero Hour.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't matter.
Yeah. No one cared.
No one cared. So what's the worst?
The worst crossover, in my opinion, and I have an omnibus of it because I was able to get it for $15.
And Avengers, I believe I chided you about that at the time.
And I don't care.
Because you can kill small
Avengers,
mammals with it.
The Crossing.
Ugh.
So Marvel needed something big. This was right before they gave up their main characters over to Image to try and boost sales. They'd kind of ruined Iron Man. Iron Man wasn't selling. The stories had been terrible for a long time. They'd tried different things to get Iron Man to sell. So what they finally did was, okay, let's do a complete reboot on Iron Man because we, you know, they killed Superman. They did this. They did this. We, you know, we replaced Iron Man with a black guy and that sold for a while. Let's do something to Iron Man. So we found out not only was Iron Man working for Kang, the time traveling bad guy.
You really got to trust a guy who sounds like, you know, a pot falling off your shelf. Kang.
But he had always worked for Kang.
Yep. That bastard.
Everything he'd ever done had been part of this grand evil plan. He died. The Avengers go to an alternate universe to snatch up a 19-year-old Tony Stark in college because there must be an Iron Man for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
So we have Teen Tony.
If you start with Iron Man 319 and go to Avengers 390 and then go to the Avengers The Crossing followed by Iron Man 320, Force Work 16, Avengers 391, Iron Man 321, Avengers 392, Force Work 17, War Machine 20, Iron Man 322, Force Works 18, War Machine 21, Iron Man 233, Avengers 393, Force Works 19, War Machine 22, Iron Man 324, Force Works 20, Avengers 394, Avengers Time Slide, War Machine 23, Iron Man 325, Avengers 395, and finally, Age of Innocence, The Rebirth of Iron Man, you'll have the correct reading order. As want,
and if you
with
go
most
to
crossovers,
all of those,
they were published out of order and months after and blah, blah.
If you go to all of those, you will notice that many of them are near the end of those series runs. Because this crossover did not help sales, quite the opposite, it killed sales on books. This was also when comics were shedding readers. If you notice Forceworks, and you're probably saying to yourself, Forceworks? What the hell's Forceworks? Avengers West Coast was canceled and replaced by the more image-sounding Forceworks. War Machine, yeah, very 90s, all of this stuff was just so 90s. Now, I have the big crossover.
Oh, Avengers Crossing had a chrome cover, too.
I am starting to read it. The art is terrible.
You see what Corey's doing for your bemusement? You ought to send him pictures of Christina Hendricks and pie. Don't send him pie. Just send him pictures. I don't know if you can send pie in the mail. It gets kind of messy.
You can send pie in the mail. Send me pie.
And he'll finish reading this for you, so you don't have to.
I may just do a separate solo podcast going over just how god-awful it is, kind of like I did with Star Blast.
You got to purge yourself, baby.
Well, remember, when we started this, I wanted to do a comic book version of Wrestle Crap, where we would talk about terrible comics. That was one of my ideas that Joe very quickly stepped on.
Yes, because I try to shed my bad comics quickly.
So rather than continue to dwell on these horrible, horrible comics, let's go over my five favorite events.
All right.
Number one is Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Which we talked about. And I'll cross that off my list because that's definitely one on my list too.
And the thing is, even though it was very continuity driven, it's very much tied to a time in DC continuity, it still is a great read. Wolfman and Perez do a wonderful job of making the story. Well, Perez can take a story with 1,000 characters and you can follow it. That's his gift as an artist. But Marv Wolfman took time to introduce the characters that needed introducing and the characters who, like Jonah Hex. Jonah Hex shows up. Oh, he's a cowboy. Does it in a way that you don't, you know, there's a whole lot more to him, but nope, he's a cowboy. He's this, he's from the future, he's that. Boom, 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 boom. And it had a big conclusion. As you read it, you get this sense that everything is falling apart, which I think is the most important part. It's why I like the JSA stuff by Jeff Johns. He would give you that feeling that, oh my God, everything is falling apart. There's no way out of this, which is hard to do because we've been reading comics for a long time. We know Spider-Man's going to figure out who to punch in the face and win. Perez also does a masterful job of making all of these characters look different, which most superhero artists don't do. Again, I'm gonna crap on John Byrne again. Even the people at Marvel, when Byrne was at his most powerful, made fun of the fact that all of his male characters had the exact same face. Perez, all of his characters look different. So it really, at the time, we were excited when each issue came out, and I can still go back and read it and enjoy it. The next one is Infinity Gauntlet. I think this was the first Marvel crossover where we all went, oh yeah!
Oh yeah!
To the point where they are building to it in the Marvel movies.
What was interesting about Infinity Gauntlet is that, we'll get to this in geeking. I'm reading the Essential Silver Surfer Volume 2. What the heck? I'll talk about it now. The whole issues deal with the elders getting a hold of the various gems and using it to try to kill Galactus. What happens shortly after this whole series winds up is Thanos shows up, banishes the Silver Surfer to a planet where his power cosmic doesn't work. Because the Silver Surfer, having been hit over the head by these gems for like 20 plus issues of the first part of his series, would obviously work to stop him. Thanos goes off into a 2-issue series called Thanos Quest, which was utterly, utterly ignored by everybody. Nobody bought it. It was, I had to figure what comics were, $1.99 and this thing was $4.
It was a square bound 2-issue. I picked it up because I was a huge Starlin fan.
Yeah, and basically,
but I remember
nobody else
I worked
did.
At Shinders, and they sat on the shelf because people would go, "It's $5.
It's
I don't know
much.
Who this character is. Who cares?"
And the other thing I remember telling people is, guys, Thanos just became the most powerful being in the Marvel universe. No, no, no. Read this series. Thanos shows back up. Silver Surfer takes off for Earth. And that's what leads us right into the Infinity Gauntlet. And by that time, everybody was going apeshit looking for these two books. This is what I would refer to as an organic crossover. It was planned well. It was executed well, except maybe for the $5.99 Thanos Quest. But I'm telling you, people were looking for those books. They became $20 back issues almost overnight. And again, they've since mellowed out. But it was just people going crazy. And the Infinity, you know, how could you not? The story was awesome. You had Thanos, the ultimate bad guy. He had won already by the time the series started.
And his opening salvo was, all right, half the living beings in the universe are now dead, gone.
Snaps his fingers. And that woke up Earth. One of my favorite crossovers, DC 1 million. It was a crossover storyline ran through a self-titled weekly limited series and through special issues of almost all the DC universe. So when you're trying to figure out your numbering system and you run across Action Comics 1 million, it's not a typo. Yes, there was a 1 millionth issue. And the core of the event was basically a crossover between the 20th century Justice League of America and the 853rd century Justice League Alpha. And it brought forth a villain that they've never used again called Solaris, the Living Sun, which was just the artwork of it was just, I mean, it chilled me just to see this thing because it was just a planet-sized sun that just killed it. And without giving away too much of the series, they made a reference in one of the books after the series was over that, well, we know Solaris will come back at least once in our lifetime. And, of course, New 52 ruined that, but that's a different subject. So the crossover itself was pretty good. There's a book available you can pick up that covers the four-issue series and the tie-ins necessary to follow the main plot. Some of the crossovers just showed the characters, what happened to them in the year 1 million, or just gave a glimpse of what their descendants were doing. Hitman 1 million was just kind of a parody of the whole storyline. So, but it had, again, a new villain. It was one of those paradoxes that what happens at the end had to happen in the current time in order for that to happen, and had some good time travel, and they killed off my least favorite villain of all time, Vandal Savage. Although he got better. Of course, you're talking, that was the 1 million year Vandal Savage who meets his end. You still got a million years of him mucking around.
No, not a million years, a million months. Remember, it was the 1 millionth issue of each book.
Either way, it's all good. It's a good series.
So I think it was, what, the 792nd century or something? I love the idea of it.
Yeah, Grant Morrison wrote it, so you knew it was going to be good.
And I really liked it. I really liked it. It didn't make my top five, but I really liked it.
All right. What did you make? What else made your top five? Since you've already taken two of mine.
Let's stick on with DC. Infinite Crisis. As DC entered the 2000s, their continuity was having some trouble.
Do you think?
Sales.
You mean Zero?
Sales weren't doing that well.
What about Zero Hour? Didn't that help?
It helped for a little while.
Oh. What about
but
Crisis
DC
on Infinite
just
Earth?
Can't seem to.
Oh.
So they did Infinite
What about
Crisis?
John Byrne rebooting Superman? Oh. What about Wonder Woman starting over? Oh.
They tried to fix things with the hypertime idea, which I thought was a cool idea that they just used once, and then I think it's because Mark Waid and Grant Morrison thought it up. Nobody else understood it. So they didn't use it anymore, because what they basically said was, look, time's like a river, and sometimes things go over here, and they're away from the river, and then it flows back in. So all these stories happened. The characters, they might not have happened when we remember them now or the way we remember them now, kind of like what he did with Batman, where he said, okay, I'm going to make it so every Batman story ever happened, but you don't have to refer to it. It was very much, okay, we can refer to this, but if we don't refer to it, you know, Hyper Time, it branched off on its own for a while, and oh, somebody mentions it 2 years later, it came back.
Wolverine in South America with a little robotic doll at the same time he was up and fighting with Alpha Flight? Hyper Time.
Yeah. But Infinite Crisis really felt like, oh God, they're doing a new Crisis. And it was a sequel to Crisis on Infinite Earths, where the original Earth 2 Superman and the Earth Prime Superboy and other characters broke out because they were unhappy about what they were seeing in the DC universe. They were seeing characters becoming darker. They were seeing things becoming worse, and they wanted to fix things. And for the longest time, Superboy Prime was one of my favorite villains, because he would show up like an angry fanboy and, you know, try to beat people up because you're not doing what you're supposed to in the funny books.
And he had a habit of, like, you know, punching his fist through bodies and killing.
That was the problem I had, was the violence.
The second
tier
characters, you know.
But I thought it was a very fun crossover, and it was more what came out of it, because what came out of it, you had 1 year later, you had the weekly 52 series. It was very well planned. It felt like something big, and DC had New Earth, which they basically said, all right, we've kind of hit a reset button without getting rid of everything. So all the Hawkman mess is fixed. All of these things are fixed. They were problems that were caused by Superboy trying to break out of wherever they were.
He punched the wall.
Which led to the joke of, you know, when Joe and I disagree on something, it's, that probably both happened. Superboy punched the wall.
Or it made a deal with the devil.
Yeah.
Hyper Time.
And I like that everything flowed out of it, but it was also planned that it would flow into the next crossover on my list.
Which I admit
is unbelievably controversial. There are some people who call me an idiot for loving this book. I loved Final Crisis.
And I got to admit, I called you constantly to say, what the hell just happened? Oh, this happened. Because I didn't catch a lot of it, but sitting down and reading the story, I mean, and the actual book on it, the way, words, not pictures. I think Greg Cox.
Yeah, they did a novelization
that,
of it as well.
That helped. And I got to admit, I went probably Wikipedia and just found the correct reading order of everything, including the Batman, the two Supermans. You read it in a line. It's awesome.
It's so good. A lot of it is the things that led into it.
Suck.
The editors who were involved in that screwed up to the point where the story is that Dan Morrison, who had been writing this thing for a couple of years, was reading Death of the New Gods and what was the Countdown?
Oh God, yeah.
And saying this is not leading into my story. This is not what I said the story needed to have set up. And he was threatening to quit. And Dan DiDio flew to Scotland to say, we'll fix it. We'll do whatever you want, whatever. Basically to say, look, we're sorry. We screwed up. We'll do what we can. We'll fix it. But Final Crisis is the end of the New Gods story. Darkseid gets his hands on the anti-life equation. He has removed free will from everyone.
And again, like we talked about, with Infinite Crisis, by the time the first issue started, it's over. The bad guys already won.
Darkseid won. Yeah. The bad guys won. And it uses a lot of Kirby stuff in how the story moves and evolves, but it also has some Morrison stuff about the need for superheroes, about what they represent, about what they are, about the power of hope, the power of belief. In a lot of ways, to my mind, knowing that the new 52 came afterward, I can honestly say Final Crisis is a great way to say that's the end of the DC universe that I knew and care about.
I'll go with that.
The last one on my list is a Marvel one, and we've mentioned it already, Civil War. Mm. And I like Civil War because, you know, there were some people who complained about certain bits and pieces of it. I like the idea of it was a philosophical difference between the heroes. Some heroes were involved in deaths of innocents, and the government said, all right, we can't have masked vigilantes around. You need to register with the government. And some characters were, yes, we should register with the government. We should be, you know, we should be working with them. And others were like, no, I don't want the government to know who I am. I don't want the cops to know who I am. I don't want my secret identity out there. And it went, because it's superheroes, you know, eventually it got into heroes fighting each other. But they took their time and figured out which heroes would be on which side and why. And it worked because the Marvel superheroes have always had this uneasy relationship with the police and each other. And it worked for me because rather than it was just bad guy controls Iron Man's mind. Nope, Iron Man believes that they should register. Reed Richards has never had a secret identity. All of these characters who were on one side believed it completely and totally. Same for the other side. It was another book like Crisis in that you could go back and you can read it now, and even though there's continuity changes and differences, it's still a great story that you could read completely on its own, and the tie-ins fed into it.
And which is, there's even a Tales of the Shop attached to it.
Oh! Yep.
This was not... This might have... This was probably one of the deciding factors in me closing Crazy Comics instead of pairing through, because I'd gotten to the point, as I talked about in the past, where I got the store to break even. And, you know, obviously with the tax advantages small business has, I wasn't hurting. But again, it was a break even. Well, what happened due to art delays, Marvel in August started to push back the main Civil War storyline several months, so that in September of 2006, there would have been hardly no Marvel comics being published. It would have been pushed all the way into November. There would have been almost no way I could have paid my bills in September without any Marvel comics coming out. And at that time, that wasn't the sole reason, but that was something that definitely fed into the reason for me to close Crazy Comics. Because all of a sudden, you lose about half your income because they're having problems with the art, and everything else was tied into it. So they couldn't release the Civil War Frontline. They couldn't release the other tie-in issues. They couldn't do the Captain America 25. They couldn't do the Spider-Man storyline where he runs around going after the people that tried to kill Aunt May. And, I think Publisher War Journal 2 originally was the only one delayed. And then they were, I think you and I watched with amusement as this issue got canceled, and now that canceled, it was coming in November, and then a November announced another delay, and then Civil War VI was supposed to be December 20th. It was pushed back till January 4th, and so on and so on. And it was like, oh man. I mean, seriously, without that, I probably would have figured a way to survive, because con season was coming up too. But It was definitely something, you know, for a break-even shop at that point, there would have been no way to go an entire month without Marvel Comics, you know, even though I know later on they'd come, and they didn't. I mean, I closed in August, and Civil War VI didn't come out until January 4th, you know, and the bottom line was when you're finished with Diamond, they say, okay, well, you've got like $1,200 worth of books that haven't shipped. You buy things on a non-returnable basis. We'll settle for 10%, $120. So I still paid a dime or so on these books I ordered that never shipped. But then I was clean with Diamond. Thanks a lot, Marvel.
In case you want to open another shop someday.
Yeah. Well, you know, the funny thing was, is Diamond was like, well, if you ever do decide to go into business again, you know, we may bring these old bills out. You may have to pay them. So, you know, I don't know what that meant, but.
Well, Joe, we have gotten to the end of us talking about comic book crossovers. Ooh. You know what that means.
Yeah.
Freaking and geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on? What's bugging you? What's crawled up your behind and died?
Well, nothing much. What's freaking you?
Okay. At my job where I am in HR, we are in open enrollment.
Open enrollment is
the time when people can change their benefits for the coming year, which means it's crazy busy. And I stupidly signed up to work last weekend at the group home thinking, oh, I'll just do sleep shifts. And as longtime listeners of the podcast know, when I sign up for a sleep shift, that means I'm going to be working a lot more than I thought. I was actually talked into staying until noon both days so that residents could go to church and you go buy shampoo and things like that. So really, I worked most of the weekend. And the sleep shift, you really don't get to sleep till around 11 or 12, and then you have to be up at 5:30 in the morning. So I have not had a lot of time to read comics, to watch TV, to do any of the stuff that I do for this here podcast.
Not that
I have not had much
time
to myself.
I mean, we blather on.
Talking about old stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, that, yeah.
So. I'm kind of freaking about the fact that all this stuff is starting to pile up, and hopefully this weekend I am not working at the group home either this weekend or next weekend because of open enrollment, because I'm putting in 10 to 12 hour days. So Saturday and Sunday, I have completely off. I may not go anywhere.
You know, it's funny you say that because I kind of had a epiphany over the last week. Similar things, you know, it's like I'm closing in on 50. I'm near the end of my run here rather than the beginning. And I've got things piled up I've never read, things that I've meant to get to on the DVR, on DVs and CDs. And I've gotten to the point where I just figure, you know, I'm down to 2 days off a week. I'm just going to have to pick something and watch it or do it. We'll talk about that when I get to geeking part of the equation.
Well, let's get to geeking. Joe, what are you geeking on? What are you loving? What are you excited about?
Well, part of the epiphany happened last week when I just decided Tuesday is my eBay day. So this Tuesday, I put a couple things up on eBay. I'll just shill a few. I have another copy of Boys Number 7 that was signed by Garth Ennis and Derek Roberts. A couple Sheena, Queen of the Jungle, number ones. Sheena was kind of an interesting character because she's the original Queen of the Jungle.
Yes,
she appeared way
first female Tarzan knockoff.
Way back in 1937, created by Will Eisner and S. M. Jerry Iger. And in comics, she's appeared in large series in the Golden Age. Every so often she pops up. I mean, you're talking the original run was like from 42 to 52. Popped up once in 52. There was a couple one-shot, 3D one-shots that Eclipse Comics reprinted later on in 85. The two I put on are from London Knights run in 98, and they're the leather, bound edition. So I'm telling you, the leather is the best part of the book, so they're priced pretty cheap. But the last group that tried Sheena was Devil's Due in 2008, and I don't think they're doing it at the moment. I have a Vampirilla that was triple signed by, I think it's James Bennett, Lewis Small Jr., and then Adam Hughes signed it at one of our cons. The last book up was the first Sabretooth one-shot. This was back in 1993. They did a four-issue miniseries. Larry Hama wrote it. Mark Texera did the art, and Mark Texera signed the copy I have up on eBay. So Tuesday's eBay day. If you got my eBay site set up, It's crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z. And you got first crack at everything that might pop up. And of course, anything new that might get a good discussion, I'll bring up on the podcast, which we'll record later on that day. Wednesday will be my geeking day. And that's the day where I will, get things done, get things read. For example, I mentioned earlier, I finished reading The Essential Silver Surfer, Volume 2. That covers the Epic Illustrated first story that I think who did that? It was Stanley wrote it, and John Buscema. Am I saying that right?
Buscema.
See, that's why I need Corey to keep me straight. So that first shot, and it was painted by Rick Veitch. So it was if you can find it in the Epic number one, it's really beautiful. It reprints the one-shot Silver Surfer that Stanley and John Byrne did, and then reprints Silver Surfer 1 through 18, including...
Now, does it have the original version?
Yes.
Because there were two Silver Surfer number ones, one by, who drew it, Marshall Rogers, and one by John Buscema, with very different stories.
There is a special bonus where they reprint Marvel Fanfare number 51, and they talk about how this was, how it was going to be, and then you can go see which parts they took and put into the run. So that may be what you may be looking at.
Yep.
So that was fun. I did finish the big John Byrne Omnibus Volume 2. I read the last Galactus story. Did you have a question about that?
No, I know that it's never, ever, 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 ever going to be finished.
No.
Byrne has told people how it would end.
Yeah, and he actually, I went on to his website to look at that, and he also had a series, they had proposed Fantastic Four, The End, when they were doing those miniseries, and he had something where he would have taken parts of that story, but involved the Fantastic Four as they suddenly rushed to the future to aid against the final battle that Galactus was having. So go Google Last Galactus Story and read it if you want. It was kind of fun to read. I went around town. I stopped at a place called Your Turn, Vintage Retro Antiques, and I just kind of wandered through. They actually had a small rack of comic books that I picked up, and they were a buck.
Now, was it like most antique stores where it's, oh, here's a bunch of shitty comics from the 80s that are way overpriced, or were they actually decent comics?
Well, I picked up three. I picked up one of the giveaways that I so love. It's Jackie Joyner Curse in High Hurdles with Tony the Tiger. This one's published by DC with Sports Illustrated on the logo. And let's see. To our readers, remember, you should not try any new sports activity or exercises without the advice or supervision of a coach or physical education teacher. All right, you're covered. This came out in 1992. So I haven't read it, but, you know, again, I love these giveaways. I did find a fairly nice copy of Chamber of Chills number 23.
Ooh.
And, you know.
I love those Marvel reprint books.
Yep. Originally published from Tales to Astonish 25. This one dated 1976, and I'm ashamed to admit I bought a copy of Secret Wars 2, number 9.
I'm sorry.
Well, a part of it had to do with reading the Omnibus, because they kept referring – they actually refer to what happened in Secret Wars 2, because Mr. Fantastic had a big role in it, and so Byrne kind of referenced it, and I'm like – it just hit me at the right time as I'm going through these books. Hey, I don't recall how Secret Wars 2 ended. It's been that long. So I picked it up, and I'm like, oh, that's a dollar I'm not getting back.
The ending was pretty stupid, wasn't it?
Yeah, they could have gone elsewhere with it. But
do you know why I didn't list Secret Wars 2 as one of my least favorite crossovers?
You didn't read it.
I didn't read it. I still haven't read it. If people ask me about Secret Wars 2, I say, oh, that's the story where Spider-Man teaches a cosmically powered being how to take a dump.
Which is important if you happen to be a cosmically powered being who has never taken a dump before.
Do we need that story?
Yes.
Do we need a story where Spider-Man says, here's a bathroom?
Yeah, but you also forget when somebody offered the Beyonder a drink and he started to chew through a glass and he's thinking to himself, this body will need more repair after I finish it. So, good times. Good times. I stopped by our Cheapo Records. It's one of the few remaining places you can actually buy a disc. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, one of my favorite bands is in town, Jethro Tull. I decided not to go to the concert tonight, but Ian Anderson does have a new album out called Homo Erraticus. And I picked up the tour edition, which comes with three CDs. I haven't opened it and listened to it yet, but I am looking forward to doing that. And again, as CDs seem to be a dying art, Cheapos was one of the few places to go for it other than going online. They have tons of used CDs, and of those, I picked up three. I picked up Monty Python's The Final Ripoff, a two-issue set of kind of their best of that came out in 87. And I picked up two Fire Sign Theater. The first one was Give Me Immortality or Give Me Death, which is from 1998. It has a bunch of one-shots. And the other one is Shoes for Industry, which is one of my favorites. And it's a best of Fire Sign Theater. So, again, I have these in CD. I have a lot of Fire Sign Theater albums. It's one of the type of things where you got to just sit back and allow yourself to relax, put the phone down, and just let the sound wash over you because it's fun. It's good to listen to. For the sheer halibut, I picked up Doctor Who and the Daleks. This is the standalone movie that Peter Cushing was in that has nothing to do with the rest of Doctor Who, but nevertheless, having never seen it, although I do own the Golden Key comic of it, I thought I'd check it out. And since it was Wednesday and New Comic Book Day, I stopped by Uncle Sven's for the halibut and picked up a couple books. They had the photo cover of the new Doctor Who, the 12th Doctor. No frills, no scarf, no messing, just 100% Rebel Time Lord. And I'm a sucker for a photo cover, so I picked that up. I did not order this the first time around. I'm going to try it. Trinity of Sin number one. I like Phantom Stranger. I'm not too keen on the other characters, although I'm intrigued by the way they have Question in this new 52. So I'll give that a try, and if I like it, I'll keep it. And just to top it off, I picked up one of the BBC Doctor Who magazines, the official magazine of the BBC television series, the very best of the first five decades, as voted on by you. I figure it's fairly safe. I love the Doctor Who magazine, but as I'm not going to be watching Doctor Who until after it's on disc, I'm trying to avoid spoilers, unlike Walking Dead spoilers, which I don't mind because I usually forget them anyways. So having visited three stores, I decided to stop in Barnes & Noble, wander through. I always get a kick to see what kind of comics they have, what type of graphic novels they have. Over the summer, they had quite a few artists coming in, signing various copies of their books and writers and things. So they're obviously taking a page out of comic shops and trying to get business away from Amazon. So I picked up for a Neil Bogan, originally $35, now a mighty $7.98 Total Recall, my unbelievable true lie story from the Arnold of Schwarzenegger. I figure it would be a good read for $8, and if I don't like it, I'll just give it back to them. So I have that going for me. Corey.
Which is nice.
Hear me now. Read it later. What are you geeking on? What's got you happy?
I'm going to start with non-comic book stuff and segue into comic book stuff. Remember how my son built a whole bunch of shelves in one of the rooms and put up all the hardcovers?
Yes.
He is now doing it in the living room for all the DVDs. Now, the living room is a mess right now because he's reorganizing and changing and moving and shifting and stuff. And some of the furniture hasn't been moved in a good 10 years. And I never vacuum under furniture because that's just crazy talk.
Yeah, if it's under there, it doesn't exist.
Nobody sees it, so who cares?
No, can't.
There are two sets of shelves that are done, and boy, it's impressive. Most I have a very impressive DVD collection, and I can't wait till he's done so I can organize it alphabetically.
It is nice. Holly did mine and my CDs over the summer. So it's nice to be able to go down there and, you know, find the box you want and pull it out and open it up, only to discover the disc isn't inside it.
The next thing is there is a new channel on Roku TV. Joe, do you have a Roku?
Not yet. It's on my to-do list, okay?
There is Cape Television, which is a new free channel where they have a whole bunch of superhero serials, the Marvel superhero cartoons, other superhero-related TV stuff that you can watch. Writer Mark Ellis, who is a friend of mine on the Facebook and is the current owner of Justice Machine, he wrote the Outland series, stuff like this. He's the one who pointed it out because he was watching the Captain Marvel serial. And, boy, that Captain Marvel serial is so much better than other serials at the time.
You know, oddly enough, I saw that serial for sale at Cheapo Records. I almost picked it up, but I didn't.
It's very good.
Maybe I'll go back and pick it up.
But Cape TV, if you got a Roku, add it. Boy, those Marvel 60s cartoons, those are a hoot and a half. Because what they did, they just cut out pages from the comic and would move them across or move the mouse. So it's, oh, it's a Ditko Hulk. Now it's a Kirby Hulk. Now it's a Don Heck Hulk. there's a comic coming out that I have not got yet, but I cannot wait to buy it. Joe, you know of my love of Quentin Tarantino.
Yes, and it's unrequited, your love for Christina Hendricks.
You know of my love for spaghetti westerns.
Yes.
You know of my love for Matt Wagner. I have the two tattoos I have are of his characters.
Yes, he wants to talk to you about that, but that's a different part of the show.
Matt Wagner and Quentin Tarantino are teaming up to do Django versus Zorro.
I feel good because I have already ordered it.
I have decided that I'm not going to buy it as floppies. I'm going to buy it as a hardcover when it comes out. Mm-hmm. But Matt Wagner is showing pages on his Facebook page as he gets them done. Oh, it's good. Oh, it looks good. Ooh,
oh, I was so excited. I'm sucker for a crossover. And when I saw the names attached to that one, it was just like, getting it.
And I think this is the first comic Tarantino has worked on.
I believe you're right.
And then the last comic I have, I actually read this on the Marvel Unlimited app. Atom, the Blue Marvel. It was a miniseries that came out a few years ago. And it's of a character from the early 60s that we didn't know about because Marvel's characters have only been around for 15 years. That's the way the universe works. Whatever year it is now, the Fantastic Four went up into space 15 years before. So the Fantastic Four went into space in 1999, Joe. How's that make you feel old?
Oh, I find plenty of ways to feel old.
The Blue Marvel is a five-issue miniseries about a character in the 60s who was a kind of a Superman-level power, except he was African-American. And with all of the racial stuff going on in the U.S. at the time, the government freaked out and asked him if he would retire. He did, but his greatest villain is returning. Really good continuity implant without feeling like a continuity implant because, you know, we've had the characters from the 40s and then the Marvel heroes came back in the 50s. There's now this gap of from the 60s to the 90s that grows every year. And the character has returned in Mighty Avengers, which is going to be Captain America and the Mighty Avengers. Basically, it's the Black Avengers. Luke Cage and his other black friends have made their own Avengers.
Sweet Christmas!
Kind of like how in TNA, all the black wrestlers teamed up. They don't have a name as a group, but we call them the Blacks because we're horrible that way. But Blue Marvel has shown up in Mighty Avengers. He's a very interesting character. I like the take on the character. The story was really good. If you've got the Marvel Unlimited app, it's free. Go ahead, read it. It's 5 issues. I love that Marvel Unlimited app, man.
I was going to sign up for it, and then TCF sent me a notice saying that due to the various credit card breaches they've been having, they're sending me a new credit card. So if I sign up for it, then I'd have to turn around and put a new credit card on it. So I figured,
you can sign up through PayPal.
I
do it through PayPal.
Maybe I might do that. But yeah, I'm game to get that. And that'll be interesting over when I do sign up, because they say they will put new issues online about a half a year after they're published.
I'm going to look right now, because they put new issues up every week.
And there are some books that I'm buying just because I like buying them. There are some I buy that I read, and there's other ones I just buy for the creator. But I could see maybe cutting back on a few Marvels.
Okay, here's what they've added. They've added Daredevil number 2, Invaders number 4, Avengers Undercover, Elektra number 1, Fantastic Four number 3, Iron Patriot number 2, Original Sin number 0. They're starting that. Superior Spider-Man 31 series finale. This week in the Marvel Unlimited Reading Club, if you listen to the Marvel podcast, they have a reading club where they say, hey, go read this out on the app and then tweet us and we'll talk about it. It's Future Imperfect, which was, good Lord. Sounds like you're bending metal over
there. Just the headphones got caught on something.
Ah. Future Imperfect was a far in the future Hulk story by Peter David and George Perez.
So what was the Fantastic – oh, wait, you said Daredevil 2?
Yep.
And in the current previews, they're soliciting Daredevil 11, which means Daredevil 9 is probably in the stores. That's not too bad.
No. X-Force number 3, X-Men number 13, those are the ones that they added this week. The other thing that I really like about it is if you go to Browse – you can browse by series, you can browse by character, you can browse by creator, and you can browse by comic event. So, remember how we talked about Infinity Gauntlet?
Mm-hmm.
Just go down here. Oh, look, there's Infinity Gauntlet. Woo-hoo. Go up. Oh, look, there's Blood and Thunder. God knows you don't want to read that.
Boy, they're going to put quarter boxes out of business everywhere.
So, that's what I'm geeking on.
Cool.
Well, Joe, we've wasted an hour and a half talking about funny books. So as we say every week, kids, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic you like the most. Joe?
You know, when I started today, I was watching the WWE Network. I figured I'd start Monday Night Wars. And then Corey called and said, let's do a podcast. So I'm going back to Monday Night Wars on the WWE app. So hold my calls. I'm not dancing, but hit my music.
Funk is on a roll. Funk is on a roll.
Hey, yo. Funk is on a roll. Can somebody call?